as exactly what Iran has done.
On Saturday, Iran's President Hassan Rouhani once again lashed out at Washington, saying its wicked activities have caused trouble for Tehran to acquire vaccines. Earlier this month, the head of Iran's central bank also slammed the U.S. administration for its sanctions, which he said have been hampering efforts to purchase the inoculation. Abdel Nasser Hemmati said Iran is prepared to purchase the vaccine through the World Health Organization, but it is unable to transfer the required money due to what he called inhumane U.S. sanctions. Hemmati, however, expressed hope that the vaccine-related transactions will be facilitated through other channels. The administration of U.S. President Donald Trump unilaterally pulled out of the Iran nuclear deal in May 2018. Since then, American officials have targeted every Iranian sector with sanctions ever enforced against any nation. The U.S. economic pressure has prompted the Iranian officials to take a tactical step against such measures. Earlier this month, leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, urged officials to focus on neutralizing the sanctions apart from securing their removal. The leader even cautioned against trusting the enemies and warned that U.S. hostilities toward Iran will not end once President Trump leaves office. But from the medical field to the military complex, technology, and a whole host of other fields, Iran has advanced its know-how domestically thanks to the U.S. maximum pressure campaign and sanctions.
Clearly, the U.S. campaign of maximum pressure has not succeeded in overturning the government of the Islamic Republic, and in fact has made it stronger and more resilient. And an unintended consequence of all of this maximum pressure campaign has been to force Iran and other countries under the thumb of the U.S. to become more self-reliant and to seek other trading arrangements, other military arrangements, other political alliances. And the end result is that the U.S. empire is now declining, and it will continue to decline at an ever-accelerating pace.
But the U.S. measures are not bound to sanctions alone. Washington and its allies, namely Israel, have a long history of using other evil tactics to prevent Tehran from its advancements. That includes the assassination of Iranian scientists, with Mohsen Fakhrizadeh being the latest victim of U.S. and Israeli plots. Fakhrizadeh is not the only Iranian scientist assassinated by the American and Israeli agents, and probably will not be the last one.
The U.S. and many of the G20 countries engage in regimes of economic sanctions and programs of hybrid warfare against a number of countries, with the point of bringing these countries under their control. The U.S. is an empire, and it uses campaigns of hybrid warfare, which included, for example, the targeted assassinations of General Soleimani and the nuclear scientist Dr. Fakhrizadeh. Includes economic sanctions. It includes continuing attacks in the mainstream media. It includes lawfare initiatives against the government of Iran. And it does all this in the hope of bringing down the Iranian government.
Probably they forget the fact that the advancement of a nation does not depend on one person. Eliminating icons like Fakhrizadeh will, of course, be felt for long, but will not stop Iran from going forward. The U.S. anti-Iran moves also raise questions as who is the United States really targeting by using all possible means to block a country's progress, be it hampering efforts to buy a coronavirus vaccine or anything else.
From the very start, there was no doubt that the EU would not give the British a deal that would match any of the conditions met by being a member of the EU. So when Johnson and von der Leyen announced a deal had been struck, why then did the UK hail it as a victory? But with the details yet to be fully made public, many people are labelling the deal as a sham for the British, clearly suggesting that the EU negotiators, led by Michel Barnier, stood firm to the end and made sure that the EU did not come out the loser on the deal. According to one French source familiar with the exact details of the paper, and who wished to remain anonymous, it seems that the British made huge concessions, giving up many of the terms and conditions they claimed that they would fight for. However, it seems that ultimately, the British team had no choice but to cave in. Several days after the deal was announced, EU and British officials and lawmakers are poring over the details. The document is rumoured to be some 1,200 pages long, but once read and digested, will demonstrate just how many concessions the UK finally gave into and reveal just exactly what Boris Johnson tried to hide on announcement day.
Brexit is a disaster, an absolute disaster, and it's one that Boris Johnson is like hugely responsible for just by himself. I mean, as a journalist, he did his very best to poison the waters between the UK and the EU. He succeeded, the referendum passed, and now Britain is facing the reality, just a few days away, of a forcible separation from the continent.
What was clear from Johnson's announcement is that nothing new has come from the deal, with Britain claiming victory over its borders, freedom of movement, and trade criteria, all things that, with a deal or not, Britain would have had anyway. So where then does the victory lie for Whitehall? Johnson's next task is to win over the hardline Brexiteers, many of whom who wanted to leave the EU without a deal, claiming that Britain will be fine on its own. However, it seems that Johnson may have already convinced many to fall in line, as any sign of division now by the British would send a message to the world that the deal was in fact a disaster for the UK, a message that Britain can ill afford to leak out. The British made numerous promises prior to the announcement of the deal between Britain and the EU. Some of these promises included protecting the rights of British fishermen, farmers and businesses. Yet it seems, as details slowly emerge, not all are happy about the deal. British fishermen, for one, have already started claiming that they've been sold out by Boris Johnson as they face sharing British waters with EU fishermen for the next 5.5 years, only increasing their quota from 10% to 20%, suggesting that not much will change. But when it comes to the financial value of fishing in the UK, one has to really question the fishing industry culture. With fishing making up only 0.1% of the overall British GDP, is it any wonder then that Johnson failed to push hard for a fair deal, raising the question as to just what else he folded on?
There are several. There are the question of fishing rights, which apparently he had to give more ground than he wanted to. Which essentially gives the EU greater rights in the English Channel than British fishermen had wanted to grant. The other one involves business services, and that's really quite unclear as to what will happen. The agreement is 1,200 pages long, so no one at this point is quite sure what's in it.
For Johnson, and all in favour of Brexit, a long road lies ahead before the full impact of Brexit becomes clear. But what's for sure is the level of uncertainty and division that lies ahead. For a start, Scotland will no doubt seek a second independence referendum, sparking a chain reaction that will likely see the north of Ireland request to be united with the Republic of Ireland, causing a breakup of the UK, something that seems an inevitable consequence of Brexit. From the EU perspective, Britain, it seems, is a spent force, a country living in the fading memories of past glory, and slowly but surely, floating further away from Europe, something that the EU, for one, will be happy to watch sinking on the horizon.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
The Limelight.
Georgia claimed that thousands of voters submitted postal change of address forms, but the U.S. Postal Service said they did not. In addition, Georgia allegedly violated the NVRA by employing an unlicensed contractor who used an incorrect list, says Marjorie Conrader in an article published under the heading, U.S. Civil Rights Groups Fight Back Against Georgia's Voter Purges. Stay tuned, please. The importance of January 5th Senate runoff elections in Georgia cannot be overestimated. They will determine which party controls the Senate, with vast ramifications for economic policy, climate change, workers' rights, immigrants' rights, judicial nominees, and much more. The purging of nearly 200,000 registered voters from the voting rolls in Georgia could spell the difference between a Republican or a Democratic majority in the Senate. In October 2019, Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger purged 313,243 people from the voter rolls, claiming they had moved from their registration residence, which is a ground for removal under the National Voter Registration Act, NVRA. But five top expert firms hired by the PLAST Investigative Fund, PIF, determined that 198,351 of those Georgia voters had not moved at all and were therefore illegally purged from the rolls. Georgia claimed that thousands of voters submitted postal change of address forms, but the U.S. Postal Service said they did not. In addition, Georgia allegedly violated the NVRA by employing an unlicensed contractor who used an incorrect list. The PIF experts performed a name-by-name analysis of the addresses using advanced address list hygiene. John Lenser, an address hygiene consultant and CEO of American Fifth Act, testified that this is the industry standard for residential address verification. The experts called on more than 240 data sources. They found a 63.3% error rate. That doesn't even include tens of thousands of other voters purged for moving within their neighborhoods or apartment buildings, which constitutes a violation of the NVRA. Georgia's officials have been exposed using a horrendously inaccurate list of voters whom they claim had filled out postal change of address forms, investigative reporter Greg Palast told reporters. The Postal Service itself says they did not fill them out. They did not move. Yet, the postal hacks that run Georgia's elections have chosen this rotten trick to stop tens of thousands of citizens from voting. The cancellations primarily impact young voters, low-income voters, and people of color. In a prior case, Georgia's Secretary of State admitted that voters could be restored to the polls within 24 to 48 hours if necessary. Why then does Raffensperger refuse to reinstate those voters? It is a cold, racially poisonous game, brazenly backed by the Republican National Committee lawyers desperate to bend the upcoming Senate runoff, Palast said. The voter registrations were canceled because the Secretary of State alleged they had filed a change of address form with the National Change of Address NCOA registry. Election officials had received returned mail, and Georgia law, in effect at the time of the cancellations, allowed removal if, after 3 years of no contact, the voter did not return a confirmation postcard and then did not vote in the next two general elections. This is known as use it or lose it. For civil rights organizations, including Black Voter Matter and Rainbow PUSH Coalition, filed a lawsuit in U.S. District Court for Northern District of Georgia on December 2nd. The suit was based on the expert reporting of PIF and the official report of ACLU of Georgia that was published on September 1st, 2020. Those experts determined that 199,908 voters can still receive mail at their address of registration, so it is not likely they have moved. Plaintiffs are asking that the nearly 200,000 names allegedly wrongfully removed from the voter rolls be restored in time for the critical runoff election on January 5th. In the alternative, they seek the appointment of a special master, an expert who would review the work of the PIF experts and the Secretary of State's list maintenance experts to decide which voters were wrongfully removed from the rolls and reinstate them. NVRA, which Congress enacted in 1993, declares that voting is a fundamental right. It requires that federal, state, and local governments promote the exercise of the right to vote. And it says, discriminatory and unfair registration laws and procedures can have a direct and damaging effect on voter participation in elections for federal office and disproportionately harm voter participation by various groups, including racial minorities. Georgia's use it or lose it rule violates the Equal Protection Clause of 14th Amendment. The lawsuit claims because it creates incorrect distinctions, thereby disenfranchising infrequent voters. On December 16, 2020, the district court judge denied the plaintiff's request for an injunction for noncompliance with NVRA's 90-day notice requirement, but the judge said there were discrepancies and told the parties to sit down and try to settle the case. On December 28, 2020, the plaintiffs filed a motion for reconsideration and a request to add the Palast Investigative Fund as a plaintiff in the case. A letter the plaintiff's attorney sent to Raffensperger on September 22nd on behalf of PIF would then satisfy the 90-day notice period, which expired on December 23, 2020. The plaintiffs are also asking the judge to order the Secretary of State to count the provisional ballots of voters who tried to vote but whose registrations were canceled for moving when they didn't move, as documented by the plaintiff's experts. the voting rights groups have not joined together to develop a proactive strategy to expand voting rights, given the amount of defense they had to play. Jean Mirer, activist from New York, said she thinks it is more important than ever for progressive groups to work in coalition to combat the Republican efforts in 2021 and 2022 to shut the doors to easing access to voting that COVID-19 opened. Expect an onslaught of moves to constrict access to the ballot, she said. Meanwhile, Mirer's legal team will continue the struggle to reinstate the purged Georgia voters to the rolls in time for the Senate runoff elections. Biden beat Trump in Georgia by 12,000 votes. The purged voters could decide who wins on January 5th.
Around the world with reporters.
Taiwan University has held a ceremony to mark the anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Taiwan's Minister of Science and Technology, who was attending the ceremony, said that universities and academic centers have great capacities to keep the path of Qasem Soleimani alive by studying different aspects of his personality and beliefs.
General Qasem Soleimani was a great person. His personality had different aspects. I believe that academic centers should study his behaviors and personality. I think his lifestyle and beliefs serve as a good role model for all the youth of our country and the world. We have great capacities and potentials at universities and academic centers in this regard.
The event in Taiwan came as people and officials attended a ceremony in the city of Kerman, the burial place of General Qasem Soleimani, to remember his lofty status 1 year after his martyrdom.
The martyrdom of General Qasem Soleimani had a big impact on the minds of people, both because of his own personality and what happened after his martyrdom. Therefore, for a researcher and an expert of social sciences, his martyrdom provides a wide range of topics to study.
General Soleimani, the commander of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolution Guards Corps, IRGC, and his trench mate Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis were assassinated along with their companions in a U.S. terror drone strike near Baghdad International Airport on January 3, 2020. Meanwhile, in response, the IRGC targeted the U.S. airbase of Ain al-Assad in Anbar province in western Iraq to retaliate the U.S. assassination of top Iranian anti-terror commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. Moreover, according to Iranian officials, Tehran has filed a lawsuit against the U.S. for assassinating General Soleimani, and soon a court session will be held in Iran in this regard. Iranian officials believe that more than anything, the U.S. assassination of General Qasem Soleimani has proved to the global public opinion that the U.S. administration is the leading sponsor of terrorism in the world. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
In gratitude for their sacrifices in confronting America, Israel, and the Houthis in the region, Yemenis held an event to commemorate the first anniversary of the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and his companion Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis in the presence of the Iranian ambassador and representatives of the Islamic Resistance Movement.
Today, we live on the martyrdom anniversary of the two leaders, Soleimani and al-Muhandis. Remember the positions of these two heroes to stand by the nation's causes. Haj Qasem Soleimani gave himself to Palestine and the resistance and was intransigent in front of the projects of the Zionist enemy through which it wants to break up the region.
The participants recalled the actions of the martyr Soleimani and how he terrified America and Israel, which thought by assassinating him to weaken the resistance forces, but contrary, it lit a fire that would not be extinguished until the liberation of Jerusalem al-Quds and the demise of global arrogance.
We commemorate the two great martyrs, Haj Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi Muhandis, who strived for God's cause and are loyal to God and did what they were required to do. God gave them wisdom and strength. They were great people, and we should follow their path.
The martyr Soleimani was an icon in the face of the Zionist entity and its projects. He played a great role in supporting the Palestinian resistance movement and stood by the Iraqi Popular Mobilization Forces in its battles with Daesh in Iraq.
Once again, Yemenis have taken a resolve to continue the legacy of General Qasem Soleimani in the face of years of aggression against the impoverished nation by Saudi Arabia and some of its regional allies and their Western backers. Abdul Latif Al Washali, Sana'a.
Crowds of people as well as officials have flocked to Sayyida Zainab Shrine near Damascus to pay tribute to Iranian top commander Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani. In an address to the ceremony, Iran's ambassador to Syria said General Soleimani was a symbol assassinated by the U.S. to force Iranians to kneel, stressing that the resistance front will triumph and take revenge of Soleimani's blood.
The Iranian nation will never sit back against those who carried out the crime. Those behind the crime will be punished. Iran will continue supporting Syria and its army until the Syrian army's sovereignty is restored on all territories.
Other speakers underlined the effective role of martyr Soleimani in defeating Daesh terrorists in Syria and Iraq and foiling Western plots across the region. Representative of the Syrian army in the ceremony praised General Soleimani as a brave and wise commander who won the trust of all resistance fighters.
We have gathered here today tribute to martyr Soleimani. His sacrifices will not be forgotten. We will continue adhering to resistance as a sole option. We promise martyr Soleimani that his memory will be our path.
The crime of assassinating General Soleimani amounts to international terrorism in its ugliest form. General Soleimani's assassination is a great loss to Iran, Syria, and the resistance front. But thousands of Soleimanis are yet to come.
Photos of General Soleimani were also showcased in and around Sayyida Zainab Shrine. General Soleimani, who was assassinated by the U.S. in January 2020 in Iraq, led Iranian military advisors in Syria for years across Syrian territories, mainly Aleppo, Damascus, and Deir ez-Zor. His command played a major role in restoring stability to hundreds of square kilometers in Syria. General Soleimani's significant achievements in Syria cannot be forgotten by the people here. Syrians have marked his first martyrdom anniversary by showing appreciation to his support and acknowledgement that security in so many areas in Syria wouldn't have been possible without his presence. Hamad Ali from Sayyida Zainab Shrine, Damascus Countryside.
People have gathered here in Kabul to pay respect to the bravery and the leading role of two significant figures against invading forces and foreign-backed terrorists, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Afghanistan's national hero, Ahmad Shah Massoud.
Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and our national hero, Ahmad Shah Massoud, were close friends and comrades in the region. Their sacrifices have not been fully highlighted yet, so we need to know them more than ever.
Given the fact that Afghanistan has been repeatedly invaded by some superpowers, mainly over the past two centuries, resistance is considered a familiar concept among the nation. Afghans have had some top resistance leaders like Ahmad Shah Massoud, a national hero who became the victim of a terrorist attack back in 2001. His characteristics are very much similar to that of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani in the eyes of Afghans.
The U.S. expected to remove the name of Qasem Soleimani from the minds of resisting nations by assassinating him. But contrary to those expectations, he became a popular hero, not only for Iranians, but also for all resistance nations across the world, just like Massoud.
Afghans and Iranians share many commonalities in terms of history, culture, religion, and security. Many people here in Afghanistan believe that one of the major similarities between these two nations is their resisting spirit against the invaders. This event in Afghanistan marks the memories of two well-known resistance leaders, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Afghanistan's national hero Ahmad Shah Massoud. This comes as Afghans themselves are suffering from terrorism and are seeking to follow the path of these two heroes. Syed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
A year has passed since millions of Iranians attended the funeral service of slain Iranian military figure General Soleimani. Now, on the first anniversary of his assassination by the U.S., his fellow citizens in Kerman have once again come to his burial place to pay respect to him. Soleimani was the commander of IRGC's Quds Force, which is in charge of conducting overseas operations. He was killed in a U.S. air raid outside Baghdad International Airport on a direct order from U.S. President Donald Trump.
We strongly demand that the Islamic Republic take harsh revenge. This is the demand made by all Iranians who owe their security to the efforts of General Soleimani in the fight against the terrorists.
General Soleimani is well known as the nemesis of the terrorists in the region. He played a key role in dismantling Daesh terrorists in Iraq in 2017 and helped liberate major areas in Syria from the terror group. That's what makes everyone question the U.S.'s drive behind his assassination.
General Soleimani brought the U.S. to its knees in the region. The U.S. sought to trigger chaos in our region by creating Daesh, but General Soleimani helped unite the people of the region and foiled Washington's attempts by defeating Daesh.
Following Soleimani's assassination, massive crowds of people in Iraq took part in his funeral service to pay respect to him. This was followed by million-strong processions in Iran, the last of which was held in his hometown before he was laid to rest. Tehran regards General Soleimani as the architect of U.S.'s defeat in the region. His role in dislodging Daesh terrorists won him huge support and popularity, not only among Iranians, but among the people of Syria and Iraq, who say his assassination created a united front against the U.S. Yusuf Jalali, Kerman.
Iran has marked the first anniversary of the U.S. assassination of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and Iraq's PMU commander Abu Mehdi al-Mohandes. The ceremony was attended by a small group of people from all walks of life and senior officials due to anti-COVID health protocols. Addressing the ceremony, Iran's judiciary chief Ayatollah Raisi has warned the enemies should await Iran's harsh revenge for the killing of Iran's top general Qasem Soleimani. Ayatollah Raisi also said the assassination of anti-terror commander Soleimani will fail to undermine the resistance front.
By assassinating the hero of the fight against terrorism in the region and the world, the creators of Daesh and Al-Qaeda imagine that the resistance front would become weak. But they are wrong. The resistance front will never lose its strength. The assassination of General Soleimani has injected fresh energy into the spirit of resistance among people of the region.
Moreover, head of the Quds Force of the Islamic Revolutionary Guards Corps, Brigadier General Ismail Ba'ani, said Soleimani was the hero of defeating arrogance.
General Soleimani was the man of resistance and logic. His path will continue. Those who assassinated him should be prepared for harsh revenge. General Soleimani was the hero of defeating arrogance. He is the hero of the Iranian nation and a hero of the Islamic Ummah.
A number of foreign dignitaries, including senior officials from Islamic Jihad, Iraq's Hashd al-Shaabi, and Lebanon's Hezbollah, as well as Yemeni ambassador, were among the participants at this event, who talked about different aspects of the personality of General Qasem Soleimani. One of the foreign dignitaries who attended the ceremony was Hashem Safieddin, senior official of Lebanon's Hezbollah, who said the resistance movement should continue the path of Soleimani. He also noted General Soleimani and assassinated Iraqi commander Abu Mehdi al-Mohandes protected the world against the Daesh terror group.
Qasem Soleimani was a peaceful man because he became a general. He has been fighting for everyone. He has been fighting for humanity. Such people, we need them. Such people, there are few in this world.
General Qasem Soleimani was a man of resistance. His behavior and his beliefs taught the lesson of life. To all freedom seekers, he is a role model. He was a symbol of the fight against oppression. His name will remain in history forever.
General Soleimani, former commander of the IRGC Quds Force, was killed in a U.S. drone attack in Iraq on January 3, 2020.
On the first martyrdom anniversary of General Qasem Soleimani, senior Iranian officials have once again vowed to bring to justice the main perpetrators of his assassination in due time. According to Iranian officials, a lawsuit which has been filed in Iran against the U.S. for assassinating General Qasem Soleimani is in its final stage, and soon a court session will be held in this regard. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
After dozens of civilians, including Ghadi's government officials, were killed and injured in the attack on Aden Airport, the deputy head of the Emirati-backed Southern Transitional Council, Hani bin Barak, accused Qatar and Turkey of being behind it, ruling out that Sana'a was involved in it.
It's clear who's behind this latest attack in Aden Airport is the one who benefited the most from this attack, and is United Arab Emirates. United Arab Emirates and its forces in Aden, because United Arab Emirates doesn't want to be there a government which can actually express the term Yemen, or which can actually be in Aden. That's why United Arab Emirates, they want south of Yemen to be divided, all Yemen to be divided, so the United Arab Emirates can control Bab al-Mandab and the Bab al-Mandab Strait, and as well control Socotra Island. And
videos that went viral on social media showed that the missiles were launched from inside the Green City in Aden, which made observers accuse the SAC of seeking to push back Hadi's government to Riyadh hotels and fail the Riyadh agreement.
The Riyadh agreement implemented its objectives regarding the main interests of the Saudi and Emirati occupation authorities. Therefore, the Riyadh agreement formed this government to require it to implement the surrender of Yemeni sovereignty and not to administer any land controlled by the occupation forces.
The deputy head of SDC had preempted the arrival of the new Hadi government with a campaign to raise the flags of South Yemen in private and public facilities, including Aden International Airport, and he also warned members of the Hadi government not to talk about Yemeni unity, which confirms the continuing tension between the two parties to the conflict in southern Yemen.
There's no place for Hadi and his government in Aden. This is the message that the attack on the airport carried, meaning that Aden will continue to suffer under the rule of the militias of the UAE-backed SDC. Abdul Latif al-Washali, Sana'a.
We're back in the eye of the storm. These were the words of Simon Stevens, the head of Britain's National Health Service, as more people are in hospital with COVID-19 now than at the peak of the first wave earlier this year. Authorities are blaming the soaring infection rates on a new, more transmissible variant of the virus, first identified in Southeast England. Dr. Katie Sanderson of the Doctors Association has warned that the strain on hospitals is only going to get worse.
The volume of sick patients coming in with coronavirus is verging on unmanageable, just in terms of ambulance capacity, A&E capacity and bed capacity. We haven't seen the patients who had coronavirus infections that they've contracted over Christmas yet, because they're probably not sick enough to come to hospital yet.
Ambulances with infected patients have been forced to wait outside hospitals as capacity is overstretched. Many more infected individuals are forced to wait at home as ambulances are unable to meet the demands on the system.
This is something that we've just never experienced before. Control room staff are having to make incredibly difficult decisions to decide who gets an ambulance and in what order, quite often with huge numbers of people waiting for ambulances and they have nobody left to send.
A growing number of National Health Service staff are also off work because they are self-isolating or have become sick with the virus. Officials are now considering tightening coronavirus restrictions, with some suggesting a total nationwide lockdown to halt the spread of the new strain. Britain has recorded more than 71,000 confirmed coronavirus deaths, although some question the accuracy of the numbers when compared to mortality rates from previous years before the pandemic. According to the Office of National Statistics, the spike in fatalities for this year remains significantly higher than the government's official record of COVID fatalities.
This year will forever be remembered for the spread of COVID-19, but another, arguably more dangerous disease has spread rapidly too, hate. more specifically, hate against Muslims. Some of the most obvious examples can be seen in France, with the French President Emmanuel Macron pushing through anti-Islam legislation to prevent so-called Islamic separatism. In a later speech, the president condemned Islam as a religion in crisis, which radicalizes citizens.
Mais je demande à tout citoyen, quelle que soit sa religion.
And there is, in this radical Islam, since this is what the issue is, let's take it on board and let's name it. There is a will, a demand, an organized method to go against the laws of the Republic and create a parallel order based on the other values. Developing a separatist society first off with the goal of ultimately taking total control, and that's what they are doing, gradually, by rejecting the freedom of expression and freedom of thought.
Tensions in France additionally increased when the state publicly began defending insulting caricatures of the Prophet Muhammad. The row spilled over into violence with attacks against journalists on the 25th of September, a teacher beheaded by a lone wolf takfiri on the 16th of October, and then on the 18th, two Muslim women wearing hijab were viciously stabbed by attackers screaming, "You dirty Arabs." Outside of France, things aren't much better, with numerous incidents of far-right Quran-burning protests occurring across Scandinavia. Between November 2019 and October 2020, at least four notorious Quran desecration rallies have been allowed, despite the fact that these protests offend millions. The Norwegian Prime Minister even publicly defended Islamophobes' rights to desecrate this holy book back in August. Then there is the Islamophobic ban on the Muslim niqab, a policy enforced by many countries, despite the fact that covering your face has been proven to save lives. Austria has also jumped on the bandwagon, punishing all Muslims for the acts of a small minority of criminals, introducing new laws intended to gag Muslims' freedom of speech.
In the fight against political Islam, the ideological basis behind it, we are going to create a criminal offense called political Islam, in order to be able to move against those who aren't terrorists, but are preparing the ground for it.
Across the English Channel, a new conspiracy has been widely circulating, claiming that Muslims are somehow responsible for spreading the coronavirus. These ideas are not supported by any facts. However, the belief was so widespread it had to be debunked by a government fact-checker website. These are just a few examples, but studies suggest that Islamophobia is present at nearly all levels of society. Vaccines are being produced to stop COVID-19, but what is being done to defeat racism against Muslims?
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
Martyr Soleimani is a champion of the Iranian nation and of the Islamic Ummah. This is the part of a speech delivered on December 16, 2020, by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with the officials of Shahid Soleimani commemoration anniversary and with the family members of that great martyr.
Shahid Soleimani turned into the champion of the Iranian nation and the Islamic Ummah. What happened following his martyrdom was the first heart slab delivered to the U.S. Another one is to expel the U.S. from the region. This requires the determination of nations and the policies adopted by the resistance front. They should fulfill this duty. This slap will be a hard one. Of course, these measures are different from taking revenge on the assassin. The measures that I refer to are related to arrogance and the U.S. in their entirety. Soleimani's assassin and those who issued the order will pay the price. This is another issue in its own respect. Of course, according to a dear personality, even Soleimani's shoes are worth more than his murderer's head. And even if his murderer loses his head, Soleimani's shoes will still be worth more. This is true, but after all, they have done a wrong thing and we should take revenge against them. Both those who ordered his assassination and the assassins themselves should know that we will take our revenge in due time, at the proper time.
Your light and love, all I see, nothing more I'd ever want to need. My Lord, protect me from dishonor, grant me faith. Be stronger among
This is a good meeting that has been decorated with the name of Shahid Soleimani. Therefore, I will issue pieces of advice which are very important. First of all, I wish to advise the officials of the country and our dear people to become strong. As our poet from Khorasan said, "Go become strong if you wish to have the confronts of life." From a poem by Ali Akbar Azadi Turbati. You both should become strong in the economy, in science, in technology, and in military defense. You should become strong. As long as you are not strong, the enemies will keep their greedy eyes on you. They will transgress against you. This is my first piece of advice, which is one that I have always offered. I myself will pursue the issue as long as I am capable of doing so. And as long as God gives me the blessing to pursue it, officials are not obliged to follow it. Secondly, you should not trust the enemy. This is my definitive word of advice.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah.
There's no doubt that the assassination of the two leaders, Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and the Deputy Director of the Popular Mobilization Forces, Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis, was a great and painful loss. Indeed, it was a great loss for everyone who knows the pivotal role that the two men distinguished in building resistance forces and confronting the American Zionist Western project to control the region and subject its people to a policy of hegemony, extortion, and brutal oppression. In our special coverage commemorating the first anniversary of the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and his companions, we strive to make sure that history will preserve Martyr Soleimani's role, especially the one which he mirrored on both the battlefield and in the political arena. His presence in West Asia emerged on the regional map in the form of direct engagement by establishing combat formations, by building the Al-Quds Force and the resistance factions that in the last decades have fought the largest battles to thwart American and Israeli hegemony. To shed light on how this great leader established an integrated philosophy through which the values, principles, and ideals of the path of resistance were embodied, with us in an exclusive interview from Beirut is His Eminence Sheikh Naim Qasem, the Deputy Secretary General of the Lebanese Islamic Resistance, Hezbollah. Thank you, Your Eminence, for your time with us commemorating the first anniversary of the martyrdom of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and his companions. How does the fall of a warrior like that of Commander Lieutenant Qasem Soleimani affect the performance of all the allied forces of the resistance in the region of West Asia in which he helped create?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. La shak anna al-shaheed Qasem Soleimani.
In the name of God, the compassionate and the merciful. No doubt the martyr Qasem Soleimani is a unique and distinguished personality. He was the commander of Axis of Resistance and Quds Force. Generally, his feats could be found in every angle in our region. The loss is real. Nobody can claim he didn't lose. At the end, the position he had, the personal capabilities in management, understanding, awareness, and his willingness to follow up are elements that accumulate through time and experience. Sure, we lost, and the Axis of Resistance lost as well, but because our march is not related to a person, but rather a method, and this method is still standing. The central leadership is represented by the guardian jurist, Imam Khamenei, may God protect him, and is still following up the general guidance and resistance commands spread over the region. One of them is the command headquarters of Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah, may God protect him, and other commands, such as Mr. Abdul Malik al-Houthi's headquarters or the Palestinian headquarters. All of those are present in the region, constituting an organizational situation. In each state, there is a collective administration with enormous capacities that could be developed and used. Therefore, these elements can alleviate the size of loss, but also develop new capabilities that will assume the responsibilities through time.
Well, Hezbollah had been coordinating most of its work with Martyr Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani since the early 90s. What was one incident that you maybe cannot take out of your memory, which you believe created maybe an eternal bond between Hezbollah and Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani?
What is remaining in my mind regarding his command of Al-Quds force since 1998 and the outset of his relation with Hezbollah, I can find the martyr Qasem Soleimani in every detail, position, achievement, and turn, so that we lived with him as if he was one of us in Hezbollah. The most significant evidence for this is what happened in July 2006 during the Zionist aggression on Lebanon. The martyr Soleimani was present in Hezbollah's military operations chamber. He left us for 2 days only in order to get assistances for us from Iran, particularly the financial support. As for the rest of the days, he was a part of the war's plan and endurance of his hardships and post-war plans. Martyr Qasem Soleimani was available in the heart of resistance's regional affairs. In other words, he was in Iraq in the morning, while in the afternoon he would head towards Syria, and the next day he would travel to Lebanon. Suddenly, he used to leave us and return to Tehran, and later a meeting with Palestinian factions, and finally, some directives related to Yemen. He was present in all fields. We wouldn't find details related to practical steps, a turn, or a strategic plan linked to the resistance in the region through 22 years without General Soleimani's fingerprints, and he himself was present in this area.
Well, the allied forces of the resistance in the region, from Palestine to Lebanon to Damascus, Baghdad, and also to Sana'a, they all vowed revenge from the assassins who targeted Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani and his companions. If I were a brainwashed Western civilian, I would ask, why would these diverse resistance factions would choose to take the responsibility of retaliating and revenging the martyrdom of an Iranian lieutenant general? How would you answer me?
السؤال المركزي هل يحق لأمريكا؟
The central question is, does America have the right to form an international coalition in every case and involve all world states and regional countries in a matter that serves its interests? But we don't have this right to join an axis seeking to solve honorable and legitimate issues related to the liberation of the land, independence, and defense against aggression, and finally, building the future for our lads and children. Don't we have the right to be an axis and cooperate collectively? How is it possible for America to assassinate the martyrs Qasem Soleimani and Abu Mahdi al-Muhandas in Iraq, while General Soleimani was on a diplomatic mission conveying messages to the Iraqi leadership from Iran? And then some European countries and international governments go ahead and express their sympathy with American administration and support its action, while it is required from us to refrain from defending and supporting a person who was behind our strength, victories, and various successes. We consider ourselves strong because we are constituting an axis, but we should be divided, and every side in this axis concentrates upon a tiny aspect. We shall be separated, particularly with this global attack. From here, I confirm that we are interested in revenge for the martyr Qasem Soleimani. But the form, style, and the details of the revenge is related to a march, not a local affair, or has a specific shape. Since you're asking your question, what should we say to the Western woman or any Western person? We must say, look, America is attacking us in all our countries and utilizes all the world's potential. How can we report this aggression if we do not defend collectively and be united?
كيف نرد هذا الاعتداء إذا لم ندافع جميعا ومتحدين؟
Well, Palestine was the center cause of martyr